Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So today we are covering fourth canto, 21st chapter through the 25th chapter, text 39. So we can open up our summary by Narayani. And we can, what's that?
38. Yes,
sir. And we can read the summaries for 21 through 25.
Chapter 21. King Purtu instructs his citizens to always perform Varnashrama duties for the Lord's pleasure, and simultaneously they must attentively serve the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas who are dear to the Lord.
As the citizens glorify Maharaj Prithu, the effulgent four Kumaras arrive and are respectfully welcomed. Sanat Kumar advises Prithu to serve the Lord in the heart to become free from desires, for one overcomes all dangers by taking shelter of his lotus feet. Prithu offers his entire kingdom as Guru Dakshina to the Kumaras.
Which one, 25?
Chapter 23 now.
Oh, 23, sorry. When the time comes to leave his body, Prithu Maharaj fixes his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, practices Ashtanga Yoga, and merges the elements of his body with the totality of elements. Fixed in Krishna consciousness, he goes to Vaikuntha with Queen Archi.
The Parcheta, born in the dynasty of Prithu, leave home to perform austerities at a beautiful lake surrounded by flowers. They meet Lord Shiva, who teaches them mantras to please Lord Krishna. With these mantras, they pray for the association of pure devotees, because by such association one advances, becomes purified, and by the mercy of Bhakti Devi understands the Lord's name, form, and activities.
While the Prachetas perform austerities underwater, Narada preaches to their father, King Prasenabharhitsat, whose intelligence is bewildered by fruit of ikes. Narada narrates the allegory of Puranjana, who lived in a city of nine gates, the body, along with his queen, who kept him under her control.
Okay, so yesterday I'm sure you heard much on King Prithu and his pastimes, incarnation. Today we're going to focus on King Barishat, or Barishman, who later became known as King Pachini Barishat. That name is derived from the previous chapter 24, the Prachetas. He was the father of these 10 sons, great, powerful sages. And they were had the desire to become perfect. And so they went to go, in those days, in that Satya Yuga, the life of the human being was much greater than it is now. So their desire was to go perform meditation, a practice of yoga for thousands of years. So on their way to go do this, they met Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva wanted to elevate them further, not just meditation on, you know, some vague form or even a concentrated form, but he gave them the concentration on, as the summary said, on bhakti, on devotional service to Krishna. And so that's a really wonderful chapter to read on your own. It's really a wonderful prayers and that we can directly apply to our devotional service or developing our devotional service. So this king Barisat, he was known, widely known for his practice of sacrifice, of performing sacrifices. And it's described that he performed so many sacrifices within the performance of sacrifice in the Vedic times. Kusha grass is spread to sanctify the arena. And so it's described that he performed so many sacrifices that the entire earth became covered with this kusha grass. So, and what was his goal of the sacrifice? You know, we hear in Bhagavad Gita, what is the goal of sacrifice? To please Lord Vishnu, right? But his, of course, sometimes the other side of sacrifice is that's there, pleasing Lord Vishnu. He's included in every sacrifice. But sometimes the goal of the practitioner is to gain some material profit, or either in this life or in the next. So this was King Barisat's, Prachini Barisat's goal, is that he was performing these sacrifices, one after another, and after another, because he wanted to keep building up his pious credits so that he could enjoy. And so, again, the description, he was just so much attached to this. He forgot what the ultimate goal of life was. So, as we've been hearing, Narada appears to ripe personalities. As we heard last week, he appeared to Dhruva just when Dhruva needed direction. And so King Barisat, Prachini Barisat, he also needed this direction. So Narada appears, and he saw the state of this king who was so engrossed in these sacrifices. You can't just say, okay, you need to stop this and concentrate on this. Sometimes we find that direct instruction is sometimes unpalatable to persons or even ourselves, that it's much more palatable if we hear a story or some history of another person, you know, and then somehow or other our mind will click, oh yeah, it sounds like me, maybe I shouldn't do that. So Narada told this allegory, which is like an analogy of Paranjan. And in the beginning of this, Prabhupada gives a few nice statements of what is Paranjana, what is the meaning. Right. So I'm going to, one who resides in the body. I'm going to read a couple of these parts of the purports where Prabhupada is first introducing this story. Every living entity is Paranjana. So that's one who resides in the body. The word Param means within this body, within this form, and Jana means living entity. Thus, everyone is Paranjana. Every living entity is supposed to be the king of his body because the living entity is given full freedom to use his body as he likes. So, the story of King Paranjana, as Narada is telling, is a story, basically, of King Barisman, Prachini Barisat. But he's not saying, you know, this is a story about you. No, I'm telling a story about Paranjana. And so, we also can hear this story in a way that, okay, yes, I'm a living entity also residing in a body. Let me hear about this story and see what lessons can be learned. So first he's introduced this Paranjana, as a king. You know, again, king of this body. We are the king of our body. And he has a friend with him. His name is Avigyata, which is unknown friend. And so, for those who don't know the story, what do you think our unknown friend is that resides with us? The super soul, right. So the super soul or the expansion of the Lord who accompanies the jiva or the living entity wherever he goes, wherever he travels. So this Paranjana and this Abhigata, they're traveling. And what is the goal of this living entity, this Paranjana, is to find some enjoyment. This is the natural state of the living entity. We are composed of Satchidananda Vigraha, or Satchidananda. We are our being, our soul is full of knowledge, full of bliss, and eternal. So we're always looking for those for things to become to enjoy, because we want that. We're full of bliss. We want that. But being engaged in the material world, we're looking in the wrong places. So this Paranjana, he's wandering, looking for enjoyment everywhere he goes. And so he comes upon what is called the City of Nine Gates. So what do you think that is? The body. And what are the nine gates? Yeah, the eyes, nose, nostrils, mouth, genital, rectum. All these are the nine gates of the body. So he resides there. And this body is described as very beautiful, very wonderful. And again, we're looking at the material point of view of because Narada is trying to get this relating to King Parcinibarisa, to wake him up, to show that, you know, we're going to tell the story, but you're going to see that it's not all fun and games or rosy. So he's residing within this city, which is described the City of Nine Gates, and it's very wonderful. The capital of that city is so beautifully decorated with emeralds and diamonds and jewels, and that's compared to the capital is compared to the heart. A living entity, and the jewels and the emeralds and the sapphires, those are described as the desires within the heart, which seems so wonderful to us. So we're residing in this city, we're the king of the city, and we have these desires. How do we get all these desires fulfilled? So it's impossible to be the king without what? Without a queen. What's that? Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay, I'll notice it. So the king cannot fulfill his desires in the City of Nine Gates without the queen. And so the story goes that this Paranjana is wandering around in this beautiful gardens, and he meets this very beautiful woman. And the woman is, for the living entity, is the intelligence, right? So we can't even attempt to enjoy something without having some understanding or some driving force to enjoy it. So we have these desires, the emeralds and jewels, these material desires, and our intelligence is what is helping us try to get them. And under her supervision, or in the analogy, the intelligence and supervision, there are 10 servants, which are the 10, the knowledge acquiring senses and the senses. So, and below them are hundreds of other servants, hundreds of servants for them, each of them. So those senses, they're always looking for the enjoyment, and the intelligence is directing them how to go about best way to get that enjoyment. And so this brings us up to today's verse that we're going to chant, where the intelligence under the direction of material energy is giving direction to the Paranjana or the soul. So we can chant together. Dharmo hyatrata kamocha. Prajanando mrityam. Prajanando mrityam yasha. Loka vishoka viraja. Yanna kevalino vido. Vidu. Dharmo hyat ratra kamocha. Prajanando mrityam yasha. Loka vishoka viraja. Yanna kevalino vido. Please chant. Dharma.
Dharma.
Religious ritual. He. Certainly. Atra.
Atra.
Here.
Yeah.
In this grihastha ashram or householder life. Artha.
Economic development.
Kamo.
Sense gratification.
Cha.
And.
Praja an. Ananda,
the pleasure of generations.
Amritam,
the results of sacrifice.
Yasha,
reputation.
Lokaha,
planetary systems.
Vishoka,
without lamentation.
Viraja,
without disease.
Yan,
which.
Na,
never.
Kevalina,
the transcendentalists.
Vidu,
no.
Translation.
The woman continued.
In this material world, a householder's life brings all kinds of happiness in religion, economic development.
Okay, you have to get the gist here. This woman
is the intelligence under the influence of the material nature.
So what she's expounding is
a little bit tinged
or fully tinged with material.
So you have to read it in that way.
In this material world,
a householder's life brings
all kinds of happiness
in religion,
economic development,
sense gratification,
and the begetting
of children, sons,
and grandsons.
After that,
one may
desire liberation
as well as
material reputation.
The householder
can appreciate the results
of sacrifices,
which enable him
to gain promotion
to superior
planetary systems.
All
this material happiness
is practically
unknown to the
transcendentalist.
They cannot even
imagine such
happiness.
So you see,
she's
giving
this glorification
of householder life
and
how wonderful it
is, how happy
you can be.
And the transcendentalists,
those renunciates,
they're always frustrated.
They're
always grave. You see
their faces. They're never happy. Do you see
their happiness?
So
This is the mooj they're speaking. So we can go around, continue going around with the purport. Read his, you know, spread it out.
According to Vedic instructions, there are two paths for human activities. One is called Pravritta Marg and other is called Nivritti Marg. The basic principle for either of these paths is religious life. In animal life, there is only Pravritti Marg. Pravritti Marg means sense enjoyment and Nivritti Marg means spiritual advancement. In the life of animals and demons, there is no conception of Nivritti Marg, nor is there any actual conception of Pravritti Marg. Pravritti Marg maintains that even though one has the propensity for sense gratification, he can gratify his senses according to the directions of the Vedic injunctions. For example, everyone has the propensity for sex life, but in demoniac civilization, sex is enjoyed without restriction. According to Vedic culture, sex is enjoyed under Vedic instructions. Thus, the Vedas give direction to civilized human beings to enable them to satisfy their propensities for sense gratification.
In this verse, the woman is advocating in the Nivritti Marg, however, on the path of transcendental realization, sex is completely forbidden. The social orders are divided into four parts: brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha and sannyas. And only in the householder life can the pravritti marg be encouraged and accepted according to Vedic instructions. In the orders of brahmachari, vanaprastha and sannyas, there are no facilities for sex.
In this verse, the woman is advocating pravritti marg only and is discouraging the path of nirvritti marg. She clearly says that the yatis, the transcendentalists who are concerned only with spiritual life, kevalaya, cannot imagine the happiness of pravritti marg. In other words, the man who follows the Vedic principles enjoys the materialistic way of life not only by becoming the happy in this life, but also in the next life by being promoted to the heavenly planets. In this life, such a person gets all kinds of material opulences such as sons and grandsons because he is always engaged in various religious functions. The material distress are birth, old age, disease and death, but those who are interested in Pravritti Marg hold various religious functions at the
At the time of birth.
Old age and death, they are addicted to performing the special functions according to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies.
We missed a line there. Without caring for the distresses of birth, old age, disease and death, they are addicted to performing these special functions according to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies.
Actually, however, Pravritti Marg is based on sex life. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45, Yan maitunadi grimedi sukham itucham. A householder who is too much addicted to the pravritti marg is actually a grimedi, not a grahastha. Although the grahastha desires sense gratification, he acts according to Vedic instructions. The grimedi, however, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instruction. The grimedi engages himself as an advocate of sex life, and also allows his sons and daughters to engage in sex and be deprived of any glorious end in life. A grahastha enjoys sex life in this life as well as the next, but a grihamedi does not know what the next life is about because he is simply interested in sex in this life. On the whole, when one is too much inclined toward sex, he does not care for the transcendental spiritual life. In this age of Kali especially, no one is interested in spiritual advancement. Even though it is sometimes found that one may be interested in spiritual advancement, he is most likely to accept a bogus method of spiritual life, being misguided by so many pretenders.
Dharma hyarta kamocha prajananda mritam yasha loka vishoka viraja. The woman continued, in this material world, a householder's life brings all kinds of happiness in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the beginning of children, sons, and grandsons.
After that, one may desire liberation as well as material reputation. The householder can appreciate the results of sacrifices, which enable him to gain promotion to superior planetary systems. All this material happiness is practically unknown to the transcendentalists. They cannot even imagine such happiness. So today's topic given is marriage or renunciation. So if we look at this verse and purport, the answer is there, right? Very clearly, it's renunciation, right? Not marriage. If you look at the verse, it's marriage. If you look at the purport, it's renunciation. So, but what is it that cut and dry always? Even in this purport, Prabhupada is giving two types of poverty marg. And throughout Prabhupada's teachings, we'll see him emphasize one type when he speaks on in a certain mood, and he'll emphasize another type. And same when he uses the term householder, grihasta, grihamedi, a lot of the times, based on the particular mood he's speaking on, he'll emphasize one of the paths over another. But if we look at all of, if we look as a whole, Prabhupada's teachings and the teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the question is not marriage or renunciation, but the question is Krishna consciousness or material consciousness. So that's the key to progressing on any part of life, because you can also be, a brahmachari or a sannyasi or a king or whatever. You can also be not just because of that social order doesn't mean you're automatically pure and that the intentions are pure. So what is it we take from this? Well, first of all is, yes, this material life, if we look again at the story of Pranjana, this journey that we're taking within our body, being directed by the intelligence, if we let the intelligence dictate like we heard in the verse, then we're surely to find, because if we ask all our grihasthas here, have you felt this sort of happiness just by having sons and enjoying in family life? I would assume, yes? Yes? No? Grihastha, Prabhu? Grihastha?
Yes and no.
Yes and no? Yeah. But ultimately, we are feeling, because we're embodied, we're feeling some distress. So to propagate or to propound that, just enjoyment, following this path of enjoyment in the material world by accumulating family members, increasing our kingdom or whatever that would entail, whether we're small kingdoms or large kingdoms, this is not the source of happiness. But Lord Chaitanya and his followers give it very clear that what is the renunciation? There's that famous verse by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogam. So what is he stating there? And it doesn't qualify, it doesn't signify, okay, this is for the grihasthas or this is for the brahmacharis or sannyasis. But he's saying, let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya, to teach us three things: real knowledge, devotional service, and detachment for things that do not foster Krishna consciousness. He has descended because he's an ocean of mercy. Let me take shelter at his lotus feet. So this is a very famous and popular verse that Prabhupada would speak on or quote many times when speaking about real renunciation. Real renunciation is not the dress or the aversion, but it is performing devotional service, becoming detached from things that don't help us perform devotional service. So whether you're a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, you have these choices. We get engaged or we get involved in different activities. But if we become attached to them ourselves, then they are not helpful in our Krishna consciousness. But those same activities, if they are used in Krishna's service, then they are helpful in becoming detached. So the question again, the, should we be married or should we be renounced? I think this, the question is marriage or sannyas, renunciation. Again, it's not such a statement that we can say, yes, here's the rules. Everyone should be this or everyone should be that. But each of us, we are our own Paranjanas. We are our own living entity within this body, and the different modes of material nature are acting upon us, and our soul, our jiva, is at a different stage of realization. And so for each and every one of us, we need to be guided by that super soul and by the expansions of the super soul, the devotees, the spiritual master, into what would be best for us in terms of fostering our Krishna consciousness or developing our Krishna consciousness. And so what that will be for each of us may be slightly different. Some of us will be advised, yes, you should get married, but not this strict poverty marg, but you should be grihastha. And Prabhupada many times has distinguished and shown the difference. What is a grihamedi, or one who is like this description, just taking that ashram just to enjoy sex, enjoy accumulation of wealth, enjoy the building and greater family, or the grihastha who is using whatever situation they have to use it in the best way to again progress in spiritual life. We can't just ignore the fact that we have the emeralds and jewels in our capital. Again, those emeralds and jewels were those desires. And however, we need to control the intelligence how best to fulfill those desires. So later in this story, in this analogy of Paranjana, we'll see how that intelligence, uncontrolled, brings him so much suffering. And then Narada sums up the story in the final chapter of this and gives more related explanations of each of these things and how to control and how to become freed from this entrapment in the city of nine gates and to become freed and engage in devotional service. So again, let's bring it back to us. What should we do? When should we do it? So again, Prabhupada had wanted to establish more this Vanashram Dharma and establishing more of a stepping pathway for the devotees and developing their devotional service. So he emphasized mostly when he was here, because we're all living in the temple, we're all basically brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, fully surrendered. And that was an emphasis, to become qualified, to become learned, to become brahmanas, so that we could teach society. But then he also showed that, yes, you can become grihastha too, be married. Don't live boyfriend, girlfriend. You should become married and practice the regulative principles of married life. In that way, it is the grihastha ashram. It is a spiritual situation. It is not a Grihamedi Nandakupam, or a dark well where suffering is. So this was his emphasis, that we need to become qualified ourselves and teach. Now, ISKCON has a history of having problems with this, our Krishna Conscious Movement. And even when Prabhupada was here, there was this almost competition of what is better, a grihastha or a brahmachari or a sannyasi or living in temples and establishing preaching there or traveling and preaching. And so in the Leelamrita we hear Prabhupada dealing with this. And a lot of times you'll hear him again, like in this purport. You'll hear very heavy sides, and then you'll hear very lenient sides. So we have to understand what was Prabhupada's mood again? What was his ultimate mood? So within that, there were different resolutions passed, very extreme sometimes, that at one point the GBC came up, well, no women and no children should be allowed to live in the temple, period, unless they're married. And so when Prabhupada heard that, he just kind of, lowered his head and he said, well, I've never wanted to turn anyone away from Krishna consciousness. And so then all of a sudden they saw his mood. So again, back and forth there was there. And then finally, it was like a culmination of this debate. And that Prabhupada gives such a nice explanation of this, I thought I'd read it. The real point, he said, was that the devotees should all think of themselves as servant of the six Goswamis. The whole problem before them was caused by forgetting we are the servants of Krishna. It is not that a particular service is especially for a grihastha or a sannyasi. He must be Krishna Das. A service is judged by the results. Why this party and why that party? Ye Krishna Tattva Veti Se Guru Hai. Bhakti Vinod was a grihastha. Bhakti Siddhanta was a sannyasi. Is one better than the other? No. So there should be there should not be threatening. We are now a worldwide organization. Prabhupada repeatedly quoted this verse, Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasa, Sudya Kenenai. Ye Krishna Tattva Veti Se Guru Hai. And this, where is this from? No, actually, this same idea came up in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Now, Lord Chaitanya was a traveling sannyasi, and he was traveling throughout South India. And he came upon, and while doing that, he would stop different villages, different towns, and he would chant Hare Krishna, get everybody involved to chant Hare Krishna, become very attached to him. But then, one time in the village, the Kormakshetra. I'll just read a few verses here. It explains very nicely. In one village, there was a Vedic Brahmana named Kurma. He invited Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home with great respect and devotion. This Brahmana brought Lord Chaitanya to his home, washed his feet, his lotus feet, and with his family members drank that water. That Kurma Brahmana, with great affection and respect, made Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat all kinds of foods. After that, the remnants were shared by all the members of his family. The Brahmana then began to pray. O my Lord, your lotus feet are meditated upon by Lord Brahma, and these very lotus feet have come into my home. My dear Lord, there is no limit to my great fortune. It cannot be described. Today my family, birth, and riches have all been glorified. The Brahmana then begged Lord Chaitanya, my dear Lord, kindly show me favor and let me go with you. I can no longer tolerate the waves of misery caused by materialistic life. And Prabhupada says that no matter how prosperous one is, that the materialistic way of life causes a burning in the heart. So, yeah, we learn things also in the Grihastha ashram that we won't learn from other ashrams. We learn how difficult it is to raise a family, especially in Kali Yuga. As Kali Yuga progresses, harder and harder it is to raise a family, to support yourself. And you learn these things. And then at the end of it, you'll think, wow, I'm glad I was successful because I still have my Krishna consciousness, but I no longer wish this anymore. I no longer desire this. I want to just concentrate the end of my life on the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya replies to this, the Brahmana saying, I want to just give up my family now. I want to go with you. So Lord Chaitanya replies, don't speak like that again. Better remain at home and chant the holy name of Krishna always. And in the purport, it is not advisable in this age of Kali to leave one's family suddenly, for people are not trained as proper brahmacharis and grihastas. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised the brahmana not to be too eager to give up the family life. It would be better to remain with his family and try to become purified by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra regularly under the direction of a spiritual master. And then this verse, Yari deke tari kaha Krishna upadesh amara gyana guru hana tara edesh. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in the land. So it's good to understand the context of this verse. A lot of times it's used or it's quoted to say, yeah, this should be our only goal. Is just we go out and preach and convert everybody to Krishna consciousness. But if we look at the context, who is he speaking it to? He's speaking it to a grihasta in family life. That, yeah, you purify your family life. You don't have to become a renunciate and to do it. You can do it in your household or life. So do it. And that's the perfection of the grihasta ashram. That you're dealing with your particular set of senses and your particular nature that you've been given, but then you're purifying it. You're using it properly in the service. And Prabhupada has shown us by his grihasta life and by the grihasta life of many devotees in the following of Srila Prabhupada how it is actually possible to be grihasta and prosecute Krishna consciousness and advance. We see on both sides, there are failures on both sides as well. There are failures in the grihasta ashram, there are failures in the other ashrams as well. So what is it what's failing? It is the remembrance of Krishna and the concentration on the service of Krishna. So it doesn't matter, marriage or renunciation, that's not the question. The answer isn't one or the other. The answer is, in whatever situation you are in, be Krishna conscious, concentrate on Krishna. We also, in the life of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, we see many of them, the great grihastas, living perfect grihasta ashram life, and we can be inspired by that. But again, it's not that we always looking for concessions. The story of Paranjana is for us. It is for us, like the Bari Shmats. That we are thinking, if we ever start thinking that, yes, I'm very comfortable, I'm very happy, I'm performing devotional service and I'm becoming happy, that is also not the goal, is to become happy by our devotional service. Our goal of devotional service is to please Krishna, serve Krishna's senses, make him happy. And so we have to read as grihastas or as brahmacharis, as sannyasis. We have to keep reading things like this to not let us slip, not let our intelligence drag us away, thinking that, oh, yes, I'm doing well. Let me enjoy now a little bit. Let me sit back and enjoy. No, we have to keep going. A few nice songs that are famous in our Krishna conscious line. First, Narottam Das Thakur, he sings, Grihe va banite take, ha goranga boli take. So he's saying it doesn't matter whether you are a grihasta or a sannyasi, if you can feelingly chant, ha goranga, or O Lord Chaitanya, if you can feelingly chant, then I want to be with you. It doesn't matter what state of social order you're in. But if you have that feeling, if you have that devotion to Krishna, then I want to be with you. That sangha, satam prasangam, that's the sangha I want to be with. For someone who has feeling, doesn't matter, grihe ba banite take, doesn't matter, grihasa vanaprasa. And also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, grihe tako, vane tako, sada hari bole tako. Doesn't matter If you're in a forest or in a householder life, just chant Hare Krishna. Whether your happiness, sukhe, dukhe, bhulo nako varande hari nam koro, just chant Hare Krishna. As Prabhupada is giving the direction in that purport we read, that in a grihastha life, just chant Hare Krishna. That is our emphasis. That is always our focus in whatever ashram we're in. Okay, we're at the end here, so we'll have questions and comments. Yes, Garrison, you have a microphone? Can you just pass it down, I guess?
Is that how we should try and choose if we do enter the Grihastha Ashram? Should we use Narottam Das Thakur's method of choosing that if our partner can chant Ha Gauranga feelingly, we can
choose
them?
Choose your...
Yeah, choose our
your partner.
Partner marriage.
Oh,
way.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, that'd be nice. But again, we're all young, at least most of us here, young students. And so what does that mean? We need to first, we need to realize and learn about Krishna consciousness. Some of the best grihasthas were good brahmacharis and brahmacharinis because they did learn that vairagya vidya. They did learn some renunciation. And so when they enter the grihastha ashram, it's not just, I don't have to follow that stuff anymore. I just enjoy. No, if you're practicing vairagya vidya, in devotional service, directed by knowledge, then you will learn very important things that also give great pleasure. But if we understand, well, yes, I still, you know, need to be married, then that's fine. But at least we have that center, we have that basis of our learning, our brahmacharya ashram, because it's essential that. You know, that helps us keep that intelligence, which is pulling, in this verse, it's pulling us away. It keeps the intelligence engaged correctly. So, yeah, we always should take advice from the devotees and the predecessor acharyas and how to prosecute our grihastha ashram as well. That always needs to have that guidance there. Yes, Jitamrita? What he says about it? Well, I mean, generally, again, he's. A lot of times Prabhupada acknowledged that almost everybody is going to be Grihastha Ashram, and then only the rare few that, you know, they can actually live without it. Well, so he doesn't distinguish always men or women in that rare circumstance. So, yeah, that we do have some examples of ladies being like that, not ever getting married and not, but, In the age of Kali, now it's like it's almost everybody has that desire, that seed desire. And although we're not saying we're not a movement of trying to create grihasthas, we're first of all, again, we're trying to create. It's an educational. We're educating people in the science of Krishna consciousness. We're trying to elevate them, their consciousness. So again, whether it's grihastha or whether it's brahmacharya, the elevation of consciousness has to be there. So specifics on that, I mean, do you have any ideas of specifics? You have a...
No, there is no restriction that women could not forego marriage, or men. But Prabhupada did say that women should always be protected. So there right. should be some situation where a woman is cared for and safe. On the subject, Prabhupada said that so all the women should be married and the men should be brahmachari, And actually, he was asked this question. I want all the men to be brahmacharis and all the women should be married. How do we do this? Prabhupada said, that is the art of management. So I just wanted to say about this that in my life I had the opportunity to be a brahmachari for 10 years, and I've been married for almost 29 years. And I learned things in the brahmachari ashram that helped me as a grihastha. And generally you make most of your spiritual advancement as a single person, you know, in your initial days in Krishna consciousness. So it's real ecstatic and exciting. But things in the grihastha ashram that I have learned have been, in a sense, more profound. Like, for example, how, you know, how selfish I was as a single person and how I had to learn with family to be more giving. And you do it automatically because you love these people so much, but it draws it out of you, you know. Right. It draws a selflessness out of you that is very conducive for spiritual life. That and many, many other things. But the main thing I wanted to say about this whole idea of enjoying, we think we're going to enjoy if we're single, we think we're going to enjoy if we're married. You know, this is the cheating mentality. This is the real problem. But what is favorable for serving? That's the question, as you nicely pointed out.
I didn't read it in the class, but I'll read this. It goes with that point. This is a Bhagavad Gita lecture in London in 1973. And Prabhupada is speaking on this. So anyway, the family attraction is required for regulated life. If there is no family attraction, there is no regulated life. We have got very good experience of these things. So family attraction required. It is not that it is rejected. It is required for regulated life. Unregulated life cannot make any progress. Therefore, in the Vedic civilization, the Grihastha Ashram is recommended. Everyone should be married and everyone should live. If possible, let him live, a brahmachari. First of all, the brahmachari ashram is given there, austerity, under the guidance of the spiritual master. So the idea is to not be entangled. The brahmachari has no connection with worldly affairs. He's simply interested with the order of the spiritual master. That is called brahmachari. So one is trained up as brahmachari and he's sufficiently given knowledge that don't be entangled in these material affairs. Try to avoid. But if you're unable, then all right, you go and marry. This is the process. First, he is taught to be vairagi, vairagya. This whole Krishna conscious movement may be called vairagya vidya. So then it goes into that as the main course. That he's almost stating in the beginning that to be regulated, you must. Grihastha life means regulation. It's not means. You know, we think only brahmacharis are regulated, they're very strict. But no, grihasthas have to be even more regulated because the attraction is there, or the propensity or the ability to enjoy. Nobody, there's not a temple commander or temple president over you right there in your home. That's a nice point Kalakanta was making, that many more profound things are because you actually have to search within yourself and you have to be, it's like a responsibility that, okay, now I am taking charge not only of my spiritual life, but I'm trying to engage my family members, my children, my spouse. We have to together work on it. So it's a really growing situation as well. Any other last comments?
Yeah.
Oh, my books. These are my books.
Yeah. I'm starting to kind of get the idea that going to Grihastha Ashram might have more to do just than wanting a relationship, like having a propensity to have a job and do so many things like that as well. That's kind of it feeds into that in the morning.
Talk about that a little bit. How do we do Grihastha Ashram practically, right?
But more. Is it not only just wanting a relationship that makes you go into Grihastha Ashram? It seems like, because it could seem like it also be like you just want to have a situation where you have your own.
Yeah, it's again, it's a whole. You're looking at the whole situation in each and every Paranjana. Each one has our own city of nine gates, and some of those, and also is accompanied by karma as well. that we also have a certain guna and karma associated with us that we're living and enacting and out within this body. So some may just have to have, they have the propensity for business, you know, they're just very business-minded. So it's, that's also there. It's not just attraction for a spouse or that type of relationship. It's also, there's other things involved. But I thought another point that you kind of, what you brought up was that how do you do it? How do we do it nowadays? You know, it's not so easy. In Kali Yuga, to be grihasa, it's not that the temples are able to just have families living in them. They're not big enough. They're not capable of doing that. And so the grihasa does need to have some independence. Just a little fruit. What's that? Well, yeah, and when Krishna consciousness first, the Krishna consciousness movement first started, you know, Prabhupada, first thing, all the people who were coming, they were like, they were hippies, boy and girl living together. So the first thing he did, get them married. So that at least their coming together was within marriage. And then he taught further. Well, marriage is not just opportunity to engage in unrestricted sex life, but there is restriction as well. And so gradually, Prabhupada taught us more and more and gave us higher principles of living in each ashram. But again, back in those days, it was all temple life. There was no community or congregation so much. And so for those first years until many, many children were being born, and then it was also sending children away to a gurukul was also not the best in some ways, because the gurukuls weren't managed properly. They weren't the best thing for the children or the parents. And so gradually, you know, we see that grihastas, they need to be independent, and they need to be take charge of those things. And so how do you do that in Kali Yuga? You know, it's a lot of us who were those brahmacharis in the temple for years, we gave up our youth. You know, I joined 17, other devotees 18. We didn't go to college. We had no experience. And so, and then we were like, okay, we're faced that we're getting married. Well, you can't live in the temple. Out you go. And then we're out there, we're struggling. You know, it's like, so again, that also needs to be re-understood and rethought out. How do we propagate the grihasa ashram in ISKCON today? Oh yeah, let's sarira avijaja. Sarira avijaja tindya teka.
Class, giving class, being on a board, raises kids really nicely, Krishna consciously, has a garden, has Tulsi, he's worked his way up without the benefit of a college degree, worked his way up to a good position at the university. So, you know, it can be done, but what he's saying about the economic problems for householders is a real, real issue, and that was the norm in the 70s. And early days, and you know, we don't encourage that anymore because the realities are different. You need to be able to support a family, so you generally need education for that, or a rich spouse, or
inheritance.
So it's good to be prepared, but you know, the important principle is Krishna consciousness. That's the gist of it. It's not so much your ashram or your external situation. That answer your question, Garrison? It's not, in other words, to be a devotee is not an excuse to be irresponsible. Oh, I'll just get married and then Krishna will take care of my children and Krishna will take care of my, you know.
There you go.
Yes, of course. One of them you can control, and the other one you cannot. So. Any other just comments or discussion about this, Damodar? Yes. Is it worth putting yourself in thousands of dollars in debt to go to school? Absolutely. If you can earn tens of thousands of dollars more, to be intelligent about it, but that is pretty much in our society what how the economics work. But alternatively, if one is willing to be an entrepreneur and work hard at one's own business, then one can. There are other ways to earn money besides a college degree. And you know that's more risky, and it's more, you know, it's more difficult very often to make a business work sufficiently to care for a family. But on the other hand, there's a chance to earn more. So higher risk, higher reward. Do the responsibilities of Grihastha Ashram divert our attention and in that sense cause us to deviate from Krishna consciousness? No, not at all. In fact, the responsibilities of Grihastha life are our service for Krishna. See, this is the whole point. You can be a Grihamedi and just forget about Krishna and get into enjoying Grihastha life or Griha, you know, married life. Or you can say, okay, now we're going to do these things for Krishna. My home is going to be a temple. My children are going to be raised as devotees. My work is going to be offered to Krishna. As much time and money as I can contribute for Krishna consciousness, I'm going to do that. You know, I'm going to raise tulsis at my house like Madhava does. We're going to, you know, have the Sheelas. Yeah. So maybe you can comment some more on that.
Yeah, well, again, we hear that the nine or the five most potent forms of devotional service, they're not social order oriented. Everybody, grihastha, children's, men, women, everyone can do this. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, associating with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, residing in a holy place. And residing in a holy place means making your temple or your house a temple, or living, you know, in Vrindavan or Navadvip. So all of those are the base, those are the concentrations of our Krishna consciousness, those five things, and engaging in devotional service. And as Prahlad Maharaj, nine processes of devotional service, again, those aren't regulated by Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha. No, everybody performs those. And to the extent that we engage ourselves in those things, to the extent we're fulfilling the duties of that ashram. So the Grihastha ashram doesn't have different spiritual duties. The duties are the same. We have to hear about Krishna. We have to study Srimad Bhagavatam. We need to develop our love for Krishna. But we have these other responsibilities based on our psychophysical nature, what we need to do at that particular time in this particular body. And so, but again, the concentration or the essence of our being, of our life, is devotional service to Krishna, engaging in His service.
That's why on Saturday mornings, whenever possible, we take the Bhakti Academy students over to very exemplary grihastha families in Alachua. So you can see in action how people have evolved their spiritual lives around the grihastha situation. And everybody should do that. Even if you're going to be a lifetime brahmachari, you should see that, because you cannot be a successful renunciate if you don't have respect for Krishna conscious grihasthas. Anything else? Any other?
Yeah, but I guess the question is, can you, I mean, maybe you are, or maybe someone is, able to just see, you know, because that's the prescription Prabhupada gives in the Krishna book. If you're attached to that type of relationship, man-woman relationship, then you should hear about Rana and Krishna. You'll purify that desire. So if you are able to fully satisfy your own desires by just hearing about Krishna, then do it, and you don't have to. But if you're not, don't. We can't cheat ourselves, and we can't cheat others by becoming pretenders in it. That externally, yes, I'm very renounced, but inside, dwelling within me is this desire. So that's kind of like the key. That's also the answer to the question: marriage or renunciation. If we're having to fight it, then you know there's some propensity there, and so. For some, we're not saying as soon as you have the desire, go ahead and get married. But try to understand it. Try to mold your life in such a way that you will still hear and chant about Krishna as much as you can. But that prescription is, it's not that we are imitating Radha and Krishna by becoming grihastas. That's certainly not at all. But we're dealing with our material bodies in this way, and we're performing devotional service as a couple instead of signaler, and we're raising our children in Krishna consciousness. So it's not imitation. It can be sadhu sangha as well. The family life, the grihastha life, can be uplifting, as Kalakanta was saying. But it's not. We definitely shouldn't see it as like imitation of Rana and Krishna. No. Yeah. Yeah, the story of Paranjana, he's going to the city of Nine Gates, and it's described as so beautiful and everything is wonderful because it's young. But now, I mean, when we're older, our city of Nine Gates are, you know, the windows are broken, the hearing gates are going out, and you know the walls are crumbling. You know, the city is no longer so great. it's actually, wow, yeah, it's not. I got to get out of the city, basically, go to the forest. But that's that propensity. You know, we have to be able to recognize it. That's why we need also in everything and every Brahmachari life, but also in Grihastha life, we need mentors, we need people to help advise us that, yeah, this may just be infatuation. And what is it that, you know, and am I ready to actually take the responsibilities of Grihastha life? Or is it just complete infatuation? I just want to fulfill this desire. So that can be there, not just with sex life, but with so many desires that we may have, that we have to carefully be sure we're ready to take it up properly. Well, there are many, many, many reasons, but I think dissolving a marriage in any movement or anything, it's not seeing the ultimate purpose of the Grihastha ashram. Yeah. I'm no longer getting enjoyment from this person, this material enjoyment. Or that person is materially, you know, that person has become more materially interested in me as we're growing older. And so that creates incompatibilities. So you also want to be compatible with the person that